Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball, and before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back, and for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47, have a car wash for €2.47, or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
Look, I said it there a while ago, this place, what to do for people across the country, really, you know, and you talk about the kids, but the support to give families as well and parents.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off The Ball Daily.
Finishing up debate here on a slight tangent. Hope you're doing a tangent this week. Turns out we are.
Billy, weren't ready for this.
No,
I wasn't.
No. It's not Fitzfield.
Be a liver.
Come on.
It's just refusal to consider the circumstances.
I'm surprised that we've gone down this angle, but I'm delighted.
It's like, if you can't lord it over people, what's the point?
Yeah, it's kind of like, how far do you go? I have a stock answer probably learned off at this point.
I'll sit out the next topic. What are we talking about?
Starts off with a dig, of course.
Nobody's hero. Nobody's idea of a hero.
I love the sound of a snooker referee counting up the score.
Yes, indeed. You're welcome along to a slight tangent, a slot that is back out of cold storage forevermore, because we're coming off All-Ireland hurling final weekend, we're coming off World Cup final weekend, we're coming into All-Ireland football final weekend, and I've been off for the last few weeks, and I'd quite frankly like to take a flamethrower to the topics du jour. Mick McCarthy.
McCarthy. This is a pleasure. I was like, you know, and I miss your broadcasting professionalism.
Mick, good to see you. Arthur, welcome back. You were with us for the news round a little earlier on. How are you doing?
Flying.
Our email is aslighttangent@offtheball.com. Mick, I know you made a call out yesterday, and we'll get to your mails in just a moment because we've got a few in, but it is good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I love this slot. It gives me a chance to say way more than I mean to, which I enjoy in the moment, but then kind of regret and don't sleep well afterwards.
Well, yeah. Why don't you sleep well?
I usually said more than I mean, to be honest.
you said exactly what you meant.
I said, yeah.
More than you intended to.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good,
It's like, what's the thing? It's like, what is Shrove Tuesday? It's not like Carnival, but like
It kind of is like Carnival.
The Rabelais,
it's certainly linked to it. Carnival runs up to the beginning of Lent.
Yeah. It's like that day where everything's on its head. But I forget, you know, truth to power, you know.
Pancake Tuesday now, yeah.
Yeah, but there's another, I'll come back to it. It's like not Bacchanal, not Carnival. Anyway, I'll come back to it. But it has that feeling of it. That thing where everything's
it's all a bit loose.
Everything's on the table.
And would the thoughts keep you up at night that you've said too much?
So yeah, maybe that's like, you know, if you kind of like have this, do you not ever get hit in the face with a kind of a bit of sort of like, oh my God, what did I just do? Or why did I say that? Those thoughts happen between the hours of 2 and 5, I find, the AM, obviously. Mm-hmm. You don't really get them the rest of the time. Your subconscious brings it to the fore and scares the living shite out of you.
So you would actually be asleep and it would start?
Maybe, I don't know, awake. Yeah. Or you could be just like awake and struggling to go back to sleep and then hits you.
That's when it gets you, yeah.
Blindsides you.
Are there any instances you can think of?
I don't know. You've put me down. You've put me on the spot here for something that I just said in passing.
If anything stands out. I would like the yoke with the... How many years ago was it now? Was it a year or two ago? Like the Welsh stuff.
That was you.
That was a good 2 weeks. Like that was mad. But there was a lot of factors at play there. But it in terms of like thinking about
it, kept you awake.
It's like, no, it didn't keep me awake, but it was like, Jesus, what's next?
And it was multi-day. It was a break week in the Six Nations.
It's bad timing. When your picture's popping up in the Telegraph, like, it wasn't even me. It was like, But you're like, you know, when there's a degree, you're like, well, if I'm annoying these people, I'm all right. But it's, yeah, that was a lot of thinking after that.
Well, you make a perfect point, because the first thing I want to talk about this evening is about giving opposition teams ammunition. And we've seen something quite similar to that over the past couple of weeks. We'll get to your emails, as I say, in just a moment. But I want to start with talking about the All-Ireland football final this weekend, because opened up the Irish Times this morning, I saw Dara O'Shea's column and I gasped. I couldn't believe what he had written. Dara O'Shea, in this All-Ireland final, it's hard to see anything other than a Kerry win. Then he goes on to write in the first paragraph, the more I think about Sunday's All-Ireland final, the more straightforward it looks. This wouldn't normally be the way of it. Most years you spend the week talking about how it's going to be a close one and how there's very little to choose between the teams. But I think when you stand back from it this time around, it's very hard to come up with anything other than a Kerry win. Then I kind of let it sit for a few minutes, and I thought to myself, why on earth am I shocked and appalled by this? Man has given prediction in newspaper column that he's paid to write. Why am I taken aback by the fact that he's been so forthright in his honest prediction? And I think we've all just been conditioned to think that any forthright opinion from a person of note from a county who's involved in an All-Ireland final just cannot possibly be countenanced on All-Ireland final weekend. How have we got to this place is a question I would ask. Like, it's fair enough if it's from within a camp where managers and players don't want to give anything themselves to sort of add to the ammunition for an opposition team's motivation. But when it comes to the punditocracy, it feels that we're absolutely in that place as well, where Dara O'Shea, for example, is causing me to gasp when he says the Kerry are going to win.
Works the other way too as well, isn't it? Like underdogs, like you do predictions for the match and it'd be like, you know, can Galway win? It's like, of course they could win. And then like tell us for 5 minutes why Limerick will ultimately win and then make a prediction and say, Galway. you're kind of lying to us there, you know, random Galway pundit of the day. But I think the other way is a little bit more, I think it's less understandable and more a created culture over the past like 20 years. This idea of the dressing room wall and so on, like it's it's outside the camp stuff now rather than inside. But like, you know, Mick O'Dwyer was famous for, you know, his patronising, you know, Cork, well, the second best team in the country, you know, it's like all this stuff, like, you know, bigging up the opposition when he might not have meant it so much. But from a pundit standpoint and from ex-players and from just general fans, like, Owen, you're saying this, I think, with some self-awareness that you're the worst in the world for it. Kerry, you've never got... Kerry are a team that are never going to win a match the week of a game.
Kerry in general.
Oh, you're Arsenal, Kerry, everything. It's like you have an outright... Like, you might feel good inside, but if I ask you about a game coming up the weekend, you have a very negative outlook, I would say, on what's going to happen. And it comes from, I think, a fear of appearing, you know... It's in your Kerry culture, I would say. I don't know. So when Dara O'Shea says something fairly reasonable about this Sunday, your reaction is to gasp.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally, yeah.
And
then when I took a moment of self-reflection, I came around to your way of thinking. But actually, my disposition in a sporting sense, anyway, I'm a happy enough person. And my disposition in a sporting sense
It's absolutely in sport.
Is one of negativity and one of fear. Like almost picturing the reprinting of the Dara O'Shea headline, should Mayo win on Sunday?
Yeah, you say that though as like, you know, they're going for their 40th.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not going to kill myself in the years here. I mean, I guess we're up at nearly 140 All-Irelands, maybe some give or take. But like, so they win roughly 1 in 3 point something All-Irelands. You know, Kerry, it's like, I guess the average that it's every, it must be every 3-4 years, they're kind of guaranteed to win the All-Ireland. Or have been historically. To your point, like from the first point, I guess the reason, I think to defend the punditocracy, part of the reason why you wouldn't often see it is because I guess in a final, it by and large is the two best teams in the country. So it's like, well, they're probably, both teams have beaten a lot of teams, so I guess one of them shouldn't walk all over the other one. But in this one, why do you think you're geared the way you're geared as opposed to the other way? Why would you not just see the rational element of it like that? Since you've been following Kerry, they have won numerous All-Irelands. It's what you do. So why would the thing of like, yeah, of course we'll go and beat Mayo.
Because there's no of course about it. Like it's still a kind of a whole sense of if everything goes to plan, that should occur. But there's also a whole bank of bad memories involved that you certainly lean on, and that certainly inform your sort of wariness about it. Like a perfect example is the Jack O'Connor sign and the removal of that this week. Like him going out of his way to speak about this and to actually have that sign removed of him being in the wedding dress and Andy Moore in the bridesmaid's dress.
It's a very creepy photo.
And, you know, Andy always the bridesmaid, congrats Jack on your big day, and Jack O'Connor going out of his way to have that removed. That's of a similar piece here. Like that's your Wales 12 men moment that could have stopped there.
Yeah, he has
won
a lot of All-Irelands though, you know? That's my only thing. Which marriage is this?
Can I jump in on the Arthur thing? And there's my understanding of it.
Just generally, like...
It's just the most misunderstood thing of all time, right? So I actually think, like, whatever happened about the criticism of the disrespect of Wales was fair. Arthur's point in it was, like, there was other people saying that Wales were terrible, and Arthur was saying, well, how bad are they? Like, for example, could. He was there. He was pushing the stupid opinion to its... Anyway, sorry, let's go back on that, right?
I was rewatching it recently obviously before Ger left. I think he was... I think the line that might have sealed it was, 12? Now we have a game.
That was you.
That was you at first. Okay, thanks for undermining my point there. I was trying to defend you all these years later. I wonder if the issue isn't so much a kind of a... I think sometimes when you talk about, you know, a fear of Kerry not winning, there is a genuine humility there to kind of an actual respect of the other team and an actual respect of over 70 minutes kind of anything can happen and nothing is a given. And we lose, like, you really, really want it, so you can't assume it's going to happen, you know, if Mayo could put in this brilliant performance and beat them. I do actually think that a lot of it, you know, in talking to you and in talking to most people who kind of refuse to kind of go out on a limb and say, we'll win this, I think that's where it comes from. I think it comes from a respect and a humility. I wonder, though, why we have such a fear of it influencing the outcome. So say if you were a bit more bullish about Sunday, that's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to put that into your... That if that's not how you're feeling, that's not how you're feeling. I don't think that's what really needs to be analysed. I think what really needs to be analysed is that if you are feeling it, why do you hide it?
Yeah.
Is there this feeling that like you're letting down? Because I think teams look at it that way. I think if an ex-pundit goes out, like, you'd have to be a bit stronger than what Dara said there. He kind of didn't say anything. But say you went out with something a little bit disrespectful towards the opposition, maybe about how many men they had to play against or whatever, you know. I think teams get really angry at that stuff and feel like you as a fan or as a person from the country, county, whatever it might be, have let us down here and have, like, you know, effed it up for us because now they're going to be up for it, as opposed to just trusting the fact that we're playing either professional or, you know, semi-professional in all but what they get paid for sport here in terms of Gaelic games. We are prepared to the nth degree. We have a game plan, and actually, if they get angry with us before the game, we could actually use that to our advantage rather than, you know, I feel like in America, they almost want to antagonize the opposition because they feel like that'll take them out of their game plan even. You know, we just have this very fearful mindset in Ireland.
Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball. And before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back. And for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47. Have a car wash for €2.47. Or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
Has anyone ever come out looking really foolish, say more so from within the games? I'm just trying to think, like, not... Like pundits, like it's water off ducks' back. Like, it's like it doesn't really matter to some of them what they say and then what happens. I'm just trying to think, has anyone actually involved, like anyone kind of spoken out ahead of time and then made to look foolish and it's stuck?
In Gaelic games, I don't really remember any examples.
I'm trying to think. And no one would. Like, I think an All-Ireland final is a bit of a different one, to be honest with you, because you would have to be pretty smug in your own sense of self to kind of write off.
Did John Milan say he'd ride a horse through Waterford? Is that if that was if they won?
Yeah, that was almost a potential forfeit.
Right, sorry. Well,
do you think we are going to do it and Gerlach Nan would be as remembered if Clare had lost that final?
No, it wouldn't be remembered at all.
But see, there you go. So there's probably a load of different examples
that have been lost. Because of the us all seeing it again in replays. Like, you know, of the match and that being one of the most famous All-Ireland wins of all time. I don't think anybody would remember it necessarily from the live broadcast.
No. No, like, I do think there is a specifically Irish thing at play here when we talk about not wanting to get above our station as opposed to not wanting to give motivation to the opposition teams. It's like, take your wins when you get them and go and celebrate them as opposed to preempting the win.
That's interesting as a theme or as a mood, because we had when Richie Hogan was in last week and they got talking about the open training sessions, which I think stopped after 2010
for health and safety reasons. Cause
they had like 10,000 people are training. Like, it's like, this isn't right. But he was talking about their mood or kind of ethos around it was like, come and watch us. Come and study us. He was like talking about different opposing teams who'd be showing up in the county tracksuits. Like making no bones, but it's like, come and watch us. Doesn't matter. You're not going to stop us. Now, maybe that's less of a proactive confidence / arrogance. But it is, it's certainly not a, again, you're kind of thinking of, we'll do our best and we'll see what happens. Like, I think Kilkenny, and I don't know if it's a thing with Kerry, but Kilkenny certainly seem to revel in their brilliance more than I feel Kerry do. Insofar as, like, I think Kilkenny are very, in that period, were very self-assured in their, we're brilliant, we might get bet, whatever, but, like, we'll be back. But, like, with the Kerry thing, again, I was totting it up in my head. Even it matches out, anything across your lifetime, I think Kerry win about an All-Ireland every 3 years.
Yeah, well, I think that that's, it's an interesting point to make, because I think one of the other themes of the summer has maybe been a little bit of the celebration policing, particularly around David Clifford and, you know, his reaction to scoring the winning point against Dublin a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, where, I don't know if I want to name, who's policing that? Because I saw a particular tweet and it was the biggest load of bullshit I've seen. That type of thing. Where is that just one of the manufacturing outrage?
I don't know. To be honest,
carry on.
It was actually kind of going in one of my WhatsApp groups. This idea of, you know,
manufactured WhatsApp anger.
Yeah.
Was it people putting it in or people putting in a particular person saying a particular thing?
It was actually more vague than that. I'm watching the Kerry Dublin game in a faraway place. I'm in Mongolia when I'm watching it, and one of the lads is like, I see people giving out about Clifford for celebrating. I think it's great. So I should be backing this up with more facts than I actually have, or kind of layering sort of examples onto this. But maybe not. Maybe that's just.
Well, actually, I think that's an interesting point about celebrations and about Kerry winning as often as they do, despite almost this sort of, you know, lack of, not confidence, I don't think so, but lack of kind of bombast support, you know, is that they don't play football that way. They play football with a supreme confidence, and they always have, and they don't freeze on the big occasion because they were born to be there. They're expected to be there. And actually, you know, I think if you look even at the hurling final, maybe that isn't in the tradition of Limerick, but Limerick's performances in finals is because that's where they feel at home, and there's teams coming that, you know, haven't figured out the occasion yet, and Limerick are like, right, well, we'll eat you for breakfast, like, you know. You would trust Kerry to put in their best performance of the season on Sunday because of the way that county is built. And it is interesting that that doesn't transfer to the way pundits and supporters talk about them.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's I think there's also a trend here where you look at, say, some of the other aspects that have come up in Gaelic games over the past couple of weeks. We'll get to Darragh O'Donovan in just a moment. But the other example here of overconfidence, it's not dressing room wall material, but certain things that are plucked out as a sign of overconfidence. And the really famous example that comes to mind is Joe Canning versus Don Logue on the train situation on the side of the Croke Park pitch. Like, when we've got to that point where the trains and booking your trains, and maybe called off football matches are being brought into potential factors for a team getting motivation, we've probably jumped the shark a little bit, have we?
Do I take that?
Hey, well, I was just wondering, as an aside, is that the big fear with Kerry football, that you end up becoming Cork Hurling? It's like all of a sudden, like, because effectively
filling out stadiums.
No. But effectively, like the same thing. Like what you're talking about with thing with Kerry was like, yeah, that's a root and branch traditional Cork approach to we'll reach our peak when we get to All Ireland finals. We win All Ireland finals. If we don't win, we'll be back and we'll win the next one. And all of a sudden, it's 22 years.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, and not actually. And look, in fairness, you would ask like. I was talking to Richie Hogan last night about whether there's a culture change or issue in Kilkenny. He's like, absolutely not. The club hurling as strong as ever. And it's kind of like what's almost left unsaid there is like, were they too, and arrogant is too strong a word, and I don't mean it, but just for the sake of this conversation, were they too cocky in their success not to lay the groundwork?
Is cocky better than arrogant?
I don't know. Not to lay the groundwork for what needed to be done, and if you just expect it to happen when everybody else is turning to this like professional like model, you're being left behind. Anyway, look, it's probably not the point here, but I actually want to talk about the Joe Canning thing and whether I think we're having totally the wrong conversation about hype. Joe was in the middle of making a point there. He wrote about it in the Irish Times afterwards about, and the trains, Don Logue, performative as he is, jumped on the, oh, you can't talk about the trains. And that conversation was over then, and it became silly and, great TV, don't get me wrong, and it created a lot of conversation around it. But I don't know if we've ever kicked into the real point, because I'll say now, do you remember the conversation we had after Cork and Galway? I was on holidays and we were chatting about kind of like, I'll remind you, we were talking about the fact that...
Oh, do you mean about the final? Like about
no, but on the semi-final, like, because until they address the fact that they are freezing on the big occasion...
Oh, sorry, that conversation.
Cork aren't actually going to get over the fact that they're freezing on the big occasion. You know, like, if that is anything to do with the fact that they have this unbelievable support and this unbelievable hype that follows them around, I think the issue isn't... cancel the issue. Nobody's trying to suggest they should stop being like that. Nobody's trying to suggest that Cork fans shouldn't be getting behind their teams or bringing 40, 50, 60,000 to games. It's bloody unbelievable. Or even planning in advance, whatever of it. Maybe don't cancel your football games and ruin your club for the next 10 years. That's a bad idea. The rest of it, I'm totally on board with, right? But if you don't talk about the fact that that exists and that Cork aren't living up to it and they're playing their worst possible performances are coming consistently, other than maybe the 24 final. And I think that was a good game. They showed up. You can't really argue with that performance. But that kicked it into the next 2 years being this, is there something wrong here? And the hype goes even further up. So they have to kind of honestly have a conversation about how are we dealing with this situation, as opposed to just saying, it's grand. That's what we want. We want our supporters. You know what I mean? So I do think, as opposed to it being this thing about giving out about booking trains, I think it's like, have an honest conversation about whether or not you're dealing with this properly.
Do you think...
Maybe they are, but I don't feel like that's anybody... Everybody's shutting it down.
If you saw Ben O'Connor say what Andy Moran said the week before last, would that be dealing with it, in your view?
Yeah, I don't know if it would... I think it would be a good answer, as it was for Andy Moran. And I do think that, again, us not being a police on joy and on support and on people having fun around games and stuff like that. The supporters aren't the issue for me. So I think that's a really good way of handling it. But I don't know if that's necessarily addressing the fact that we need to get a handle on that as a group. And we need to make sure that, you know, that's affecting us in a positive way or not at all. But certainly isn't like making us frightened of the occasion. And I don't know if Cork are frightened of the occasion. You can't say that. We're not in their heads. We don't know. All I know is how they've performed in their last two games in Croke Park has been significantly below what they're capable of.
Darragh O'Donovan, can we finish up on this? Just in case people have missed these comments from Darragh O'Donovan afterwards, always one of the great characters, particularly after Limerick win the All-Ireland, definitely the definition of a of a hurler who gets his job done on the pitch first of all and then gives a load of gold after Limerick inevitably win the All-Ireland. He said, we actually hadn't put together a 70-minute performance all year, probably going back to the tip game in the league. That was the last time we put a real performance together. But I said to the lads last Saturday morning, we had a meeting before training, and I said, this doesn't need to be a one-point victory. Why can't it be an obliteration? Why couldn't we just stamp our authority on a team and just put our foot in their throat? You just keep going and keep going, and that's what happened. It was phenomenal. It was class to watch. And then he said, the body language, you could see going in at halftime that they, Galway, looked broken. Their system, they were going short all the time, and our lads were just putting the pressure on with the press, the squeeze in the middle third, and the amount of turnovers that were executed then. They looked like, what are we doing here? What are we going to do? What's the plan? That's good stuff there. And
like, that's, I mean, good. It's gold.
This is the inside conversation that we don't get any insight in when it comes to, like, this week, for example, in either of the camps preparing for the football or Ireland. Like, is there potentially similar conversations going on in Kerry around why should it be a one-point victory? It should be 10. And like, if it's mad to me that that actually occurred and that's a real conversation that happened in the Limerick setup.
Well, I remember, and I don't remember exactly where it came from, so don't fully know the veracity of it, but it's nothing problematic. But before
good to hear.
Kerry Armagh last
again
year.
Tonight.
Before Kerry Armagh last year, I definitely remember hearing stories about Jack O'Connor banging that drum somewhat. Not sure where that would have come out or how that would have come out, but effectively the almost again, and going back to earlier thing, the Donal O'Cusick thing, about like, we're Kerry, we're Cork, we're whatever. And I think there's a degree of that, like, we're Limerick, we have 5 All-Ireland medals, these boys have, a few of them have won, but like, why would we not be going out hammering these guys? I suspect that happens. I suspect that's common enough that teams go in, like, if you do your due diligence and you're like, we're going to outwork them, we're going to outdo them and everything else. And like, to be fair, that's why I think a little bit, to tie it back to Kerry this weekend, like, Kerry have, nothing to fear sounds bad, but like, Kerry have, on the face of it, every possible reason to, like, you have to make the case for Mayo to win. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's self-evident, like, why Kerry would win. And I'm not saying that, no, but you'd have to, like, you have to construct a case. Yeah. Like, if this happens and this happens and this happens. But the fact of the matter is that I think more often than not, anyone would accept that if both teams play to their fullest potential, which is kind of impossible, but if, you know what I mean, Kerry win. Just based off the probably better players 1-15. That's not a mad scenario. So, like, I suspect in their camp,
it's like Galway, we don't really know what Mayo are made of yet. But
yeah, but in that Kerry camp, they know they that.
There could be more. Look, the obviously we saw what happened with Galway, but a lot of the conversation last week when we didn't was their changing of the guards happen and teams develop as the year goes on, and we could see. And I thought Mayo were brilliant in the semi-final. We're not getting into analysis here. But I actually thought Kerry had been lucky to win the last two games.
Yeah.
Especially the Tyrone game for me, actually. I know the Dublin one caused more controversy.
But the Tyrone game was closer in the end.
It was closer in the end, and probably all the way through, really. And one thing, that it was the only game that Kerry didn't have the big purple patch that got them ahead, you know, that they've had in every other game. So, just again, I just think that, I'm not certain, but I think the point about leaving training and like Darragh Donovan, and you read it in so many books where you're like, kind of like, somebody did something and I knew we were all right. You know, I knew we would win. And it's like, and that's usually before a hammering. You know, it is. Like, that's usually before, like, a real day of days. Like,
one last point I want to make on this, and I meant to make it earlier, just on Darragh O'Shea. You talked there about Kerry being pushed pretty close in their last two games, which is the main reason why people are going to give Mayo a chance this weekend. I think Darragh O'Shea could easily have made a decision this week to give the Kerry team a bit of a break and to say, to build that argument that you just built. But I wouldn't be particularly surprised, this is just me speculating, wouldn't be particularly surprised if he casts his mind back to after the Armagh defeat last year and the manager of the Kerry team, who is still, funnily enough, the manager of the Kerry team, producing his own flamethrower on the critics. The main critic last year was Darragh O'Shea, and he thought to himself, do I owe this man a favour? No, I do not owe this man a favour. I am going to speak from the mind. And out came whatever he fully believed this morning in the Irish Times.
So maybe when Jack comes out, he's like, and to all those people who said we were going to win easy, how dare you? Okay, we won easy, but that's not right.
Our number is 087-918-180 if you want to get us on WhatsApp this evening, but we'd love your emails, a slight tangent at offtheball.com. We're going to take a quick break. Mick is here, Arthur's here. They'll still be with us after the ads.
Off the Ball Daily.
You're welcome back to a slight tangent which has been taken out of cold storage. It's Owen, Mick and Arthur here in studio. We did get an email into the Off the Ball account earlier this week, and we're going to, you know, say thank you to our colleagues at Off the Ball Breakfast for prompting this email. So this emailer got in touch to compliment Sarah O'Donovan on her great analysis on Monday morning. He said, Sarah was great this morning. Please ensure we can keep her on more. Balanced, empathetic, open-minded, knowledgeable, and not afraid to give or change opinion. We can believe her like we do Cullum, Owen, Keith Friday, Arthur, etc. Anyway, to my point.
Keith Friday.
Sarah made this comment about Limerick turnovers. 41 in the game, and 29 of those were what she called swarm turnovers. Galway had 7 of these. Never heard the term before, but it's interesting. The point I wanted to make is that Jude Bellingham was going down the left wing trying to relieve the pressure, and 3 Argentinian players swarmed him and pushed him over the line. That happened 29 times in the final for Limerick, or once every 2.5 minutes. That's fair work from the Limerick lads. It's a key point. So that's from Fergal, who's been in touch with us.
The Bellingham thing, because I wasn't sure what he meant, that was the time when he won possession back off, I don't know, was it Molina? I'm not sure what player it was, but went, he chased them with other players, won the ball back, and it actually led to the Argentinian goal. The header, the winner against England. So that's the reason that probably is in his mind for that one. But obviously that's Limerick's swarm was unbelievable at the weekend, I thought. Like it was a game won by like forwards defending. Mm. You know, like Galway just never got out of their half basically in any with any kind of ease at all during the game. Like it was mad to see, because usually that's something that you kind of see in analysis or you see once or twice live and then you realise they've been doing it. But this was like you couldn't avoid it. Like Galway just could not get the ball. They'd actually even execute the 2 or 3 passes that they usually do to create the space, and there'd be still nobody. There'd be still no room, you know, and then they would eventually obviously make the mistake.
It was brutal. Brutal. When you're seeing it at halftime and a team's only scored 2 points from play, in a game where there's only a 5-point difference, you're like, this is going one of two ways. It's like one of these is going to kick on. I did feel it for them. It was a tenderizing.
And there was a bit of hope that they would produce a Tipperary performance in the second half, like Tip did last year, which kind of came out of the blue. It felt at the time.
Cork, though.
The other team were involved.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
One more email here. Hey lads, all the talk around Argentina being a universally hated team has got me thinking. I just can't get my head around why they weren't hated this much at the last World Cup. Their antics and their shithousery were just as bad. Remember the penalty shootout against the Netherlands in 2022? Their behaviour was deplorable that night. Is it just because they won the World Cup? Is that why they were spared the criticism? If they survived extra time last Sunday, for example, and won the game on penalties, would any of this criticism even exist? Appreciate your thoughts. Stephen and Drogheda. What do you think?
Stephen. I think their level of any shithousery that was there in 2022 and even in this tournament elevated to bastardry over the course of the final. And I think I sensed anyway, and it's funny, I said this on the show on Monday, and the comments online were basically universal saying, no, I didn't want them to win. But I got the impression, and I certainly felt, and a lot of people I know felt, that it was like, this isn't a lovable Argentinian team, but they're kind of curious and there's something kind of mad about them and amazing in their own way. Not all that likable, but kind of unbelievable. And they have Leo Messi playing more important to them in 2026 than he was in 2022 as a 39-year-old, and wrapping up the greatest career of all time by winning the World Cup makes a lot of other stuff forgivable. Over the course of the final, and people don't have anything against Spain, I think people quite like the Spanish players for the most part. And just watching it, I think people just had enough, you know, and there was a change. And that wouldn't usually happen over there. People kind of usually stick to their teams. But I thought it changed over the course of the final rather than over the course of the tournament. But again, a lot of people would disagree.
I just needed them to do a job by the semi-final. Beat England, that was kind of all. That was my vested interest for wanting them to stay around. But I've no love for them. I have no love for him and that kind of thing.
Have you ever?
Nah, not really.
Okay, so I've always loved Argentina, and it probably goes back to being alive and growing up in a period where Maradona was the hero of football, and I don't know if it's that. You guys would have grown up in a pre-Messi, post-Maradona time in terms of like watching World Cups and stuff like that. So were Argentina just like a kind of a normal team full of, you know...
flatter to deceive.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Less
than the sum of their parts.
Hard to watch.
Wouldn't always say negative. Like, they got that great goal in the 06 World Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, Max Rodriguez.
But the one Cambiasso scored after like the 26 passes or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they always seem to be less than the sum of their parts. It's like, how can this team with all these amazing players never kind of... I got 14 final, but I don't recall much of them before that. But I don't know. Like, they were just terrible. Like, that final performance, like, it'd be hard pushed to get too outraged by anything. But like the performance before and after was just like disgraceful. It's like,
but is that shocking stuff? The manner in which they approached that final is that a big reason why there's been this level of proper disgust towards Argentina?
I always hate, right, my main thing, right, and I think what it comes down to, I always hate in sport when a team particularly is getting away with it.
Yeah,
and I don't mean getting away with like wrongdoing, but like getting away with like not. It was those things. It's always the case with England, where it's like you see the hype build. Once they reach a kind of decent level team or a team that's like it's the weird thing, or like that are above them in the FIFA rankings or whatever, they lose because they're not cut out for it, and they never were cut out for it. But everyone kind of builds up the hype. And same thing just happened here. It's just like they're not a very good team. That's a stupid thing to say.
They've won their last four tournaments. They're of an incredible level.
But like when you come across a proper elite team, it's like they didn't even entertain the notion of playing football. Do you know what I mean? Like, and even I think Graham Hunter said it last night, like, terrify them, and like it takes two to dance. Like, you can't blame Spain.
Would not organise a replaying of the Finalissimo or whatever it's called, because once Dubai became unavailable, that Argentina were like backing off any efforts to replay the game again because they wanted no part of Spain. That's what Graham said. But yeah, like for me, it was. The getting away with it within the game actually was kind of more annoying for me, because I thought that it's like, you know, you had Paredes, and obviously Romero is such an unlikable character anyway, and you have
Martinez.
Emmy. Oh, absolutely.
Awful bastard.
Awful what?
Bastard.
Well, yeah. Depends what side you're on, I suppose. Yeah, I kind of have a bit of grof for him, but I completely see it as well, you know. I'm not an idiot. But obviously, like, even Enzo Fernandez. Got booked the first fell for was like, you know, just like screaming at the referee and gesturing and all this, and then like staying on the pitch. It's actually not what they were doing. It wasn't fouling and getting away with it. It was the fact that they were playing such a victim.
Yeah.
Like we saw Otamendi and what he was saying to Rodri and all, like, as you got in the referee's head, it's like you came out and just kicked the shit out of us, like, you know? And it's like, and you only got one person sent off. Like, Paredes must have had about 9 fouls before he started a fight on full time. And never got sent off, you know. So I think that's just the idea that they just came to
spoil
a World Cup final was hard to watch when you have Leo Messi.
Even at 39, he was a bit of a passenger as well.
But he was a passenger because they weren't working the ball up the pitch. They never had any possession.
I think that tells back to the same thing. Like again, I think there was again not degrading him in any sort of which way, shape, or form. But it's funny because I heard this somewhere else on the podcast about like. How many times actually over the last 10 years have you seen that sort of aging, really upset Messi in teams that are playing against teams, proper teams? Mm. Like how many times with PSG, latter years Barcelona? It's just like so many times. And my striking thing after the last weekend, not to lump them in, was like, geez, I bet Cork to a certain degree, the Cork hurlers and England are like thinking, how in the name of God did we let these teams beat us? When you think of the higher things they're capable of, like what England, it's not like England could play at Spain's level.
Yeah, England weren't any better than
England could definitely have done better. Like, what are we bringing on 7 defenders for against these guys?
These guys are
criminally limited. Like, and it's like all you have to, like, it's just, it was.
Oh, they tactically blew it, but in terms of, like, even before the goal, England weren't any better than Argentina.
It was just one of those things.
But what Messi did against England, and to a greater extent what he did against Egypt, you know, it's in bursts, but like, I do hope that when it comes down to it and Messi's career is looked back upon, this World Cup is seen as a positive. That at 39 years old, he scored 6 goals and had 4 assists and won 2 knockout games basically by his... They won 3 knockout games, obviously, but you think Messi... They won 4 knockout games, sorry. Mm. But I think Messi won 2 of them. you know, not by in a kind of a scruff of the neck, world class player kind of way.
I think he's kind of immune from this as well. The Cucurella thing.
He wasn't really involved either, in fairness. Oh, the Cucurella thing aside,
I think he probably preserves his likability. And without him at the next World Cup.
He's not likable, though, is he? He's admirable. I don't think he's likable, is he?
As a footballer.
I think he is liked. And that's an understatement. I think, like, he's beloved.
Sorry, he is adored for his ability, but I don't think there's any likability in terms of, like, you have to have personality to have likability. Like.
I think he is so adored that it actually spills over into
sports
becoming
watches.
Likeable. And it almost, like, ability washes.
It's like, he's the last person that it actually doesn't matter what he's like off the field.
Who's the most likable player on the Argentina team, then?
Alvarez didn't kick a ball either, by the way.
Seems
but he
like
doesn't.
Good fella.
It's a funny every time, every bad game Messi has ever had, or every time Messi has not been involved in a game, it's always, in fairness, for all the praise he gets, and he gets so much of it, it's always that, well, Messi didn't do anything in that game. He can't be that good. Like, Alvarez didn't kick a ball.
The team is built to suit Messi's needs. And as I just think what the interesting thing is, and it obviously doesn't stack up because it worked 4 years ago. But it is. It just was striking. Someone mentioned that about how many times we've seen PSG outclassed during his time.
The Messi standing on his own with his head down, like, walking around.
It's definitely a thing.
Could I say one more thing about Argentina and what makes them, I think anyway, the kind of quintessential World Cup team? It would not be a World Cup without Argentina more than I think any other team.
Brazil.
Do you think even Brazil?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, because I know what you mean,
so.
And Brazil have won five, but the Argentinian support and like, where did all those people come from? Where did all the tickets come from? It's like the Qatar, America, the economy's completely crashed in Argentina. It's an absolute basket case. And there's like tens of thousands of them there for every game. Like, you know what I mean? There is just something, and I know Brazil do that too, but I do feel like there's something visceral, and it does work both ways. But I just think in terms of being engaging, there's nothing like the Argentinian fans. Think of them in the shopping centre in Brazil that time, singing all, like, the thousands of them jumping up and down singing that song over and over again. Remember Brazil de Seme Que Se Siente, whatever it was called.
Yeah, it kind of goes both ways, because you've also got this unbelievable defensiveness of their own country and this perceived racism about Argentina, or this Northern Hemisphere idea of looking down on the Southern Hemisphere team that dares to do well, which I think is complete nonsense. Like, the first result that I got when I Googled something like this in just now, Niall Horan apologises for honest mistake of liking anti-Argentina posts after World Cup. So he's been getting it in the neck for liking an Instagram post which was sarcastically titled, 8 times Argentina were really nice guys during the FIFA World Cup final. And then there's a lot of stuff about Las Malvinas / Falklands.
In 2022, and the whole documentary was, like, you know, getting there for the party of, you know, winning the World Cup and all that. I didn't know you didn't have great regard for the 22 team.
No, I didn't think they were great World Cup champions. I think the reason why everybody remembers that World Cup and it'll never be forgotten is how dramatic so many of their rounds were, that they have an ability to play down to their opponents and an ability to play up to some of the greatest players of all time. Like, I do think that France team on paper is a better team than the one that beat them in the final in Argentina, but Argentina just have such an incredible ability to play up to their opponents when required. Like, they played down to Australia during that knockout stage, and they managed to win a World Cup final against France. And I think last weekend's final wasn't very becoming of this Argentina era. I expected them to play up to Spain's level. If Spain hit their top, absolute brilliant best, I thought Argentina would be able to keep up with them. But that just never happened. So I think, I don't know, it's a jarring enough thing to have witnessed, given what we saw from them in 2022. Because, again, the cliche about them, you can never question their heart, you can never question their soul, but you can question their ability. It seems to be the thing going around about Argentina. A couple of other things we want to touch on. One last football bit here. Kevin Keegan, sadly, having passed away this week. We wanted to play you a little bit of archive audio here. This is Kevin Keegan on the steps. This is somewhere in Newcastle, Mick, is it?
It's at St. James's Park.
Park. So this was on the BBC Sport website, Kevin Keegan addressing the Newcastle fans over the Andy Cole transfer saga.
You chant, need a go. You know I'm a go. But I understand your problems, leave it with us. We've done all right so far. Eh? He's been a great player, but please don't think, the thing you said there about him playing to get away and that, That is scandalous, because honestly, that lad has given everything. He's tried harder the last probably 6 or 8 weeks than he has all the time he's been here.
Kevin Keegan, defensive of Andy Cole.
Yeah, so we kind of talked about Andy, Kevin Keegan, obviously on Monday's show, and there was so much to get to, and I this is so much more I think I'd love to talk about. But that moment for me, we were kind of talking earlier about Kevin Keegan, and I was kind of describing it to you guys, and you found it online. It was just it's such a unique thing for a football manager to do. They sold their best player to their biggest rivals, and... Or probably not. Newcastle were probably only on the rise, really, at that stage. They hadn't really got to that stage where they were competing for the titles. They went out and bought Les Ferdinand with the Andy Cole money and was just as successful, and then would eventually buy Shearer, you know. So they did have a plan, I suppose. But I think it says two things about Keegan. One is just like how mad that is that, like, you know, people are coming to protest. And so, like, Keegan himself as the manager goes out and, like, talks to them. And defend, and is not like kind of like he's not giving them their say. He's not giving them, you know, the "you're right about everything" treatment. He's absolutely but it's such a respect, I think, for the fans that he's going out there himself, you know, standing on this weird platform over them. For anyone who's ever seen the clip, but then also the fact that, like, you know, he's such a kind of a loyal kind of character. Like, Andy Cole's gone off to Manchester United. The easiest thing in the world is to, at the very least, ignore the.
John Gregory.
Accusations of him, or John Gregory, you know, like if I had a gun, I'd have shot him. About Dwight York, which is, like, you know, one of the lines of all time. But he didn't. Like, he was just like, you know, this guy is my player. Just because he's gone doesn't mean I'm going to completely disown him either. Like, you know, so I don't know. I just think it's such a unique moment. And Keegan was like that. You know, he was constantly kind of just providing this kind of content in a world before... We knew we were watching content.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. That, like, it's also a real sense of trust in his own judgment, and literally telling the fans to trust my judgment in a moment like that is, it's like almost reminiscent of the Harry Redknapp, Frank Lampard and the West Ham fans, the sort of connection between the manager and the actual fan base and those interactions that you don't really see anymore.
Redknapp's a good point. I feel like he would have been on that level as well. He would have went out and talked to them. But I don't think any of the current any current Premier League managers going out on a platform to talk to protesting fans, are they?
No. No, probably not going out like that. Wenger did it from the car, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Someone questioned his things and he kind of very easily dismantled them. Okay. I forget what the hell that was about.
And I don't remember that.
There was also Pep Guardiola dressing down the autograph hunter. There have been interactions between the washed and the unwashed.
Again, I wouldn't say it's in the same category. No,
it's quite different. Like, it's quite different.
You know, of a kind of one of the people, respect for the fans, etc.
One last clip I want to play you today is on the rugby front. So the good, the bad and the rugby, Australia, New Zealand had All Blacks legend Justin Marshall on, and he was talking about Ireland. Have a listen.
They've also turned into a pack of whingers, to be honest. They feel like their performance wasn't up to standard, but it's everyone else's fault.
Yeah.
And so, like, they've been blaming a couple of decisions within the game to go, we were ripped off, the All Blacks cheated, they always get the favourable decisions going their way, particularly at Eden Park, you know, there was this and there was that. Ugh. It was like, mate, we didn't make you drop the ball 15 times.
What do you think of that?
I always used to like Justin Marshall. I thought he was a nice guy. God, I remember around the World Cup, he was doing interviews with people bigging us up big time. I think it's like there isn't. I'd love to know what he's reacting to there, because there is no punditry that I have seen from anyone. We talked about it with Brian last night here on this show, even, and even any talk of the referee, which was a huge talking point in the game of rugby that happened, was the performance of the referee and the decisions that were made. Nobody would have it without kind of saying, here, listen, New Zealand were going to win that game no matter what happens. It wasn't, they're two separate conversations. The conversation about Ireland dropping the ball is our first 20 minutes of the conversation and why we did it, and how, and Ireland not being anywhere near New Zealand's level at the moment, or certainly not last week anyway. And then a conversation about the fact that New Zealand absolutely should have had a red card. And we would have that conversation after any Six Nations game, after any other game like that, when a thing like that happens. A dodgy non-yellow card. Brian actually dismissed that as I don't know, he didn't actually, but... the idea that Ireland were going to score a try was dismissed. He said we would have lost possession, but it still should have been a yellow card. Yeah.
if what is the relevance of the referee's performance taking up such a chunk of the analysis?
Because
if
it it's the most...
But if it doesn't impact what the result was going to be.
Because if you're watching rugby as a whole, and I watch that, and I don't think either of you watched that test match, like, so you're watching that on Saturday morning for 80 minutes, right? That was the thing to come out of it. That was the talking point.
But not that Ireland conceding like 40-odd points or whatever.
But that's another talking point, right? But what I'm saying is, actually, in a weird way, that's almost a little bit more expected without Caelan Doris, without Jack Crowley, and at the end of a long year. And I don't think at the moment currently as good as a bloody good and improving New Zealand team. But they are talking about it. We talked about that as well. We talked about Ireland. We talked about the fact that New Zealand are on the rise again. And then there's another discussion, which is about the refereeing performance, which was frankly bizarre. Like, he didn't allow a breakdown. And that doesn't suit Ireland. So obviously we're going to talk about that to an extent. You know, like, that they were denied an awful lot of opportunities. Tadhg Byrne was basically nullified as a player during the game. And we also moved on to a conversation about how, if that's the case, then Tadhg Byrne needs to adjust and the Irish player needs to adjust to the referee that's there. So this, like, again, I think there might be, there's a perception out there that's hard to change once it happens, you know. But it's like this dismissing of any conversation outside of what happens, you know, outside of just analysing your own team and their knock-ons is the biggest load of bullshit I've ever heard in my life. And I'll tell Justin Marshall
that. Yeah, you tell him that. I think you're right, though. I think it is probably just that. Like, I don't know how much he could have possibly seen of the aftermath. So it's just a kind of general thing, like Ireland.
There's aftermath I saw whatsoever that, like, didn't ultimately lead with the fact that New Zealand were the much better team. Well, it's not New Zealand anyway, I'll tell you that much for nothing.
Well, to be fair, they're in the winner's enclosure now. So they're back to where they traditionally would have been.
But that's just so they can start talking down
pats
to everybody.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So actually, are they...
They're terrible losers.
But actually, is it the terribleness actually focused on them having won this game? Talking down to Ireland, calling us whingers because they actually won this game. Maybe they were good losers over the last, whatever, 4 or 6 years.
I don't remember them being great losers now, to be honest. Kieran Reid was a good loser. He was a good man to go and do an interview and call it a hell of a tismitch and, you know, move on from there.
Right. A slight tangent at offtheball.com. Oh, if you've got any other accents.
The idea that New Zealand don't get like the benefit of referees being basically afraid to make decisions against them. Like, if you look at any evidence of your eyes over the past 30 years, you're living in cloud cuckoo land.
Send us your thoughts.
If you've got any other accents that you want Mick McCarthy to do next week, do let us know.
He'll have a tea speech.
Is that All Blacks?
That's Kieran Reid. He'll have a tea speech.
It's like we've got a number 8, the legendary number 8 sitting beside us in the studio.
Oh, you should do a whole episode like that.
Mick. I can't do any more.
Mickle and Arthur, thanks a million. We'll take a quick break.
Off the ball, daily.